Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
It is October 21st. What's that?
I was going to say, our new introduction just makes me happy.
It does. It's like you need to feel a little bit of joy before we bring the sorrow.
That's right.
But it's October 21st, which for most of y'all is like almost early autumn. But for here, we had like 5 or 6 inches of snow outside. It's starting to melt, but like, it's so funny. This has nothing to do with anything really of import, but when people move here from somewhere else, they're always shocked when this happens. And then They're also shocked by the nonchalance of Minnesotans. Like, whoa, like someone told me like, this is the most snowfall you've ever had this early in the year. I'm like, really? That doesn't seem right. I'm Mark Van Stunek. I'm the director for the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. And good morning, everybody. And Ron, I'm glad you like the new intro. Well, Kathleen's got a new name for us, Woeful Wednesday.
Woeful Wednesday. Well, we need to figure out like some sort of like downer name for like Morose Monday. Terrible Tuesday.
Tragic Tuesday. Yeah.
Thursday will be hard.
Thursday.
Threatening
Thursday.
Yeah.
And then, of course, everybody's favorite.
Fascism Friday. And we take the week. Joy happens on the weekends, you know? The sad thing we're talking about today is white unrepentance. And we have a case study that we'll spring off of.
Case study. Oh, my God.
Here's my sense of what happened. So there's the chief of staff and the deputy, chief in general, like Art Knight, black man, police officer, was the Star Tribune was asking them about like, hey, how are things going? And he said, you know what? We have this problem with diversity and we keep hiring like white boys. So like, you know, if you keep hiring the same white boys, you're going to have the same white boy problem. Like this basically, he kind of said that, like, in slightly different words, but he used the word white boys.
Right.
And it was very candid, honest, nothing really controversial about it. Like, this is what, this is a very mild version of the national conversation. But the police union put so much pressure on Arredondo, the chief of police, that this dude got demoted. He's just a lieutenant now. He's not chief of anything.
Yeah, so you know, you can look this up in the Star Tribune if you want to see all the original articles and things. But right, so this was an article on diversity in hiring in police departments, and you know the statistics, of course, are abysmal across nationally and across the state of Minnesota. I think it was there's like less than 2% of cops are people of color. So this article was just talking about that and how that's a problem and an issue. And this guy made this comment just once, and all the white people go ballistic. And the police union's comment was that anybody who felt harmed by this comment should, you know, file a complaint about the deep harm that they had been caused. And so this black man gets demoted. The black chief has to backpedal and apologize. The black guy has got to say, oh, yes, you know, I could have chosen my words more carefully, you know, blah, 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 the usual kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so we just thought that this would be a great case study when, you know, when we look at this issue of institutional racism and what is racism and what really is kind of the heart of the matter here, that, you know, to me, this just seemed like a great example, an opportunity to talk about, because here's the deal. The oppressor class cannot be harmed by somebody making a truthful comment. Whoa, it's hailing here all of a sudden.
The apocalypse is nigh.
Yeah.
It's not hailing here, so like a mile away, it's not hailing.
Well, no, I'm not a mile away. I'm in a secret undisclosed location.
Oh. Never mind. I don't even want to know that.
So the oppressor class cannot be harmed by this comment. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that the people of color and you know, black folks, and this is talked about all the time, right, have to do this code switching phenomenon where they have to learn how to speak nicely to white people, basically. and they have to learn how to be polite. So here was a guy who was saying a very mild version of what I'm sure, you know, black people talk about all the time when they're in all black settings. You know, this is just a fact. I mean, the guy didn't say anything that's controversial. You know, the good old boy network is something that everybody's aware of.
I mean, just he basically got in trouble for naming whiteness as a problem. And the thing about this is, like, you know, we could talk about reform and defunding and abolition. Like, when it comes to the spectrum of possible reforms, adding diversity to the police force is kind of a low-level reform. There used to be this program that was based, like, this community policing program that Minneapolis had to try to recruit more people from the community. And that was cut for budgets. And this is another example of this will be used. I guarantee they'll say, look, if you care about what he said and didn't want him getting demoted, you want more diversity, then you need to increase their budget. So this is how reform works. And it shows that how policing as an institution as it currently exists is unreformable.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, so here's why the whole diversity hiring thing is, you know, as one of my friends said, you know, diversity hiring is like thoughts and prayers. it doesn't necessarily do anything, right? So the chief is black, the chief of staff is black, and basically what we see is that if they speak truth to the white people, they just get canned, right? And this is because this bottom line issue of racism and the lack of repentance, which is really an internalized awareness of the problem. I mean, that, you know, repentance is this fancy theological word, but really what it is just, I actually get that there's a problem that needs to be changed, right? That's why this idea of turning in a different direction, right? I acknowledge that there is a problem if we keep going in the same direction, so I need to turn and go in another direction. Mm-hmm. And if white people do not do that, then when this guy says this, suddenly there's this feeling of, oh my gosh, you know, I'm being harmed because here's this person who is actually just saying what everybody knows to be true.
And this is where things break down. And I've had arguments recently with family members. And this, I had an argument, well, because I said I supported Black Lives Matter plus, like, I feel like I'd even want to go further. They said, how can you even call yourself a Christian? Well, anyways, one of the things that comes up in those sorts of conversations is it becomes clear that there's a fundamental lack of understanding of how power works in society, which is kind of what's at stake now with all these conversations I've seen popping up about critical race theory, how it comes out of a Marxist frame of reference and how we need to get rid of all this. Like, that's one of the big debates happening now. People suddenly discover critical theory. All critical theory is a recognition of power, societal power and how it flows. Right. Now, if you don't have any awareness of that, and you hear like some black man talk about white people in any negative way, isn't that the same as a white man saying we have a problem with black people? That's what this is. And it's so enshrined. It's not just enshrined in thinking. It's enshrined structurally, because the reason why this man had to be demoted is because the police union has so much power. And the police union, I would be willing to say, the Minneapolis Police Union is probably the furthest right institution in the Twin Cities. Like, it's super far right in its ideological assumptions, which is ironic because it's a union, it's confusing. But any sort of like minor threat, this is like the mildest threat ever to white power, and then it gets slapped down. So this idea that somehow we can appeal to their hearts and minds to reform and make a better place from within, that's not going to happen. No. Not with, as long as these people have power.
Yeah. Yeah. We got some good comments coming on.
Gus writes, reading the book Color of Law. I've not heard that book. This sounds interesting. On how government policy is at fault for segregating housing. He thinks diversity is just a bullshit euphemism. Really what we're talking about is racial inclusion. Okay, so Color of Law. That's interesting. I think that, yeah. The idea of housing, like all this stuff ties into policing. Right. It's like you basically have a baked-in system against certain people, like at every level.
So recently, an interesting example of that in the Twin Cities, a Lutheran pastor just discovered that in the original deed to his house, which is in Richfield, which is one of the first outer ring suburbs, so just south of South Minneapolis, in the deed to his house, it specifically says, you cannot sell this house to a black person.
This is the North.
That's right. This is the North.
You have to go south of Ohio for that.
Richfield North. Right. So, I mean, you talk about an institutionalization, right, because that then has all of the force of law. Right. I mean, this is a deed that's recorded with the county that, you know, is enforceable in court. And, you know, and then some nice white realtor can just say, well, I can't do anything about it. You know, it's in the deed. Sorry, you just can't live here. Right. So this is where, you know, this issue that you bring up of power and the invisibility of that to most people, it's actually, I mean, if it wasn't so sort of demonic, it would actually be kind of interesting, this phenomenon of how people cannot see that. And yet it is the issue. I mean, it's, you know, whether you're nice or not is sort of functionally irrelevant. When we're talking about these things,
people miss this all the time. Like, I had someone comment, and I don't want him to feel bad, but like it triggered some thoughts. Like, because Rush Limbaugh was diagnosed, well, he has lung terminal cancer, and we could have all sorts of talk about that. Let's talk. You know, we had this as a topic of like a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
I personally feel kind of sadness because I kind of grew up with Rush Limbaugh, and I used to think like him, and I changed. And so my sadness comes from the fact that he hasn't changed. Like, I don't understand why this change doesn't happen. Someone commented that they actually met him in real life and he seemed really funny and nice. And so it's confusing that he turned out this way. I'm like, those are not mutually exclusive at all. Most people that I know who have toxic, horrible ways of thinking have been very nice to me and very loving towards me. They only ever get mad at me on Facebook. It's like purely abstract. And so this idea that, you know, I tend to shy away from like ideas of progress, of development, like, because there's a stratification of like consciousness, like I tend to shy away from it. But in these moments, this is where I feel like, wow, I feel like I'm awake and they're all asleep and I don't understand what the difference is. Mm-hmm. Like, how does this happen?
Yeah.
Karen writes, this is the story of my life in white institutions.
Right.
You can say more about that. You've had a lot of experience in white institutions, Karen.
Yeah. I mean, and it's just, and again, this is the interesting thing and why I really do, you know, when you say, Mark, you feel like you're awake and people are not. And I think that is true. And this is where the repentance issue, I think, is so central, right? Because what repentance does is it is the process of waking you up to the reality of what you have been participating in. And it wakes you up to go, oh, wow, like there's something here that I didn't see, right? A problem that I didn't get. And then when you do that, you do enter into a different sort of psychic spiritual space, right? And, you know, and in this particular case, when you're a white person that's done that, if a black person says something like, oh, it would maintain the good old boys network, good old white boys network, like, I don't feel a single shred of distress or hurt or whatever from that. I'm just like, yeah, right, exactly. But until you do that, you do exist in a different reality, a different, very harmful, painful reality. All right, let's keep rolling. Now the comments are pouring in. It's great.
Medina writes that right there, even when black people are in positions of power, whiteness still controls the narrative and will continue until and unless we deconstruct and rebuild.
Yeah.
Karen writes, threaten white power and be undermined. Like, this is the thing. Like, white institutions, or, you know, and by white institutions, I don't mean those institutions that happen to have like 51% white people. You can still be 20% white people and be a white institution. It's just where the power is, right? Mm-hmm. The relationship with people of color, in this case, black people in particular, is these institutions are parasitic. They're not empowering these, you know, black people. What they're doing is they're trying to suck the life out of them to maintain their established power. So like when white institutions feel threatened by sentiments that are starting to question this, they'll include these people to suck the life out of them to establish themselves, not to actually change anything. And we need to really understand that if we're going to really talk about, even if we're talking about reform, which I'm not a reformist, I'm a revolutionary, but even if we're talking about reform, we can't really even have anything like reform unless we're honest about this. And this dude, Art Knight, was only kind of a little bit honest. Right. And he was demoted, like, oh, you're just a regular cop, lieutenant, boom. Catherine writes, check out the Mapping Prejudice Project for readable history of restrictive covenants in Minneapolis and instructions for how to look up your house. The fascinatingly evil thing is that many cities allow these deeds for thousands of lots, but no city ever indexed them. So proving this blatant racism that there are legal documents for becomes this huge research task.
Okay, awesome. So the Mapping Prejudice Project.
Yeah, just for some...
Cool.
Those of you who haven't been watching enough to know a little bit more about Catherine comments a lot. Catherine is a historian who studied basically white supremacy amongst Lutherans in Minnesota, which, you know, is not a happy topic for people.
Well, and which she got a huge amount of grief for and had to, quote, prove that white Lutherans were racist.
So this proving that Catherine is talking about, she's done some of this research and had to fight for that. Joyce writes, I just tuned in. Have you talked about the difference between nice and kind? Nice is about lying. Kind is about the truth. I feel like niceness is pretty much the same thing as politeness. And it's It's etiquette. It's about being civil and performing a certain way. And kindness is about like having compassion and interacting with someone in a way that maybe costs you something a little bit. And those are very two different things. But in our white middle-class consciousness in our society, we equate the two. And what that ends up happening is we don't have very kind people. We just have nice people. People talk about this with Minnesota nice all the time. It's not the same thing as being kind. It's cold. Karen writes, yes, three and counting. Yet none of them want change. They remove those who see.
Yeah, and you know, you see all the, I mean, the immediate demotion of this guy is sort of the big extreme whack way that these institutions do this. But there are all the insidious ways that lead up to that, you know, when it's a less public or more sort of subtle thing, right? So, you know, you begin to be marginalized a little bit, like the best projects get taken away from you. Then there's all this gossip. You go in for your yearly review and you get told, oh, you know, you're kind of abrasive. You know, your tone, you know, you sort of set people on edge. You're not a good team player. And these are all the dog whistle codes for, you know, basically you're pushing against the white power and we don't like that. And, you know, you either need to toe the line or you're going to get canned.
And this is where gaslighting becomes a featured topic or a featured tactic by anyone in power, any abuser, even if it's like some middle manager who's not trying to be abusive, it's just the functioning face of abuse, will say, like, if you get upset, when I hear this from friends all the time, people of color who can tell there's something happening, but white people, we're oblivious to this because we don't experience it the same way. And so then when it's brought up, it's like, no, it's just your imagination. And so I've had a number of friends who really struggle with whether or not they're sane about this. Like, am I misreading? No. Everyone says I'm misreading this. Maybe I am misreading it. And I guarantee you, like, Karen's pastored in a number of white denominations and institutions as a black woman. And I feel like churches are the worst at this sort of like way of talking.
Absolutely.
Kathleen writes, in Kansas City, Missouri, we have a famous tourist area called the Country Club Plaza. Business owners signed contracts stating that they would not sell to persons of color. Now the white people left the area. This is every major city has some version of this sort of story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Demote you or ignore you. That's a sort of disassociation and ignorance, and whiteness isn't about disassociation, so that makes sense that that'd be a common tactic. Karen, I think, tagged Lenny Duncan into this conversation. Also, Lenny Duncan is a black Lutheran minister. I live in Minnesota, and so I'm biased about Lutheranism, but here in Minnesota, for those who aren't from here, Lutheranism is the Christendom. It's the dominant religious expression, and it's very, very white.
And so, you know, Lenny has been spearheading this whole movement for the ELCA to engage in reparations. And it's just been fascinating to watch what has been happening. You know, the level of pushback, but also the level of completely ignoring. And somebody was talking the other day, I don't remember who, it may even be somebody that's on right now, about, you know, hearing a couple of bishops talking about this and then being asked, well, you know, have you read any of his stuff? Have you read his book? Have you read any? And they're just like, no. Right. So here, you know, this is this major push to try to do something in this incredibly powerful moment. And the people in power, one of their, you know, one of their best weapons is just ignoring. Right, because they have the power to do that and the power to set the agenda. And so, you know, they just say, no, I haven't read this. Is this important? Is this relevant?
To kind of talk about this a little bit more, like as a white man, ignoring can sometimes be an intentional tactic, but sometimes white, like we are, I think we tend to underestimate most white people underestimate how disassociated we are all the time and how much this is part of their conditioning. Mm-hmm. You see anybody like you just shut down, like you can see like almost the life fall out of their face and leave their eyes, and they don't know how to respond. Like, what am I supposed to do? And so then they just move on. Like, that's, it makes sense that that'd be a way that people would instinctively respond. And so when you have this psychologically happening inside your manager's head and they have a power interest in silencing you, it's a double whammy for where they're not even knowing that they're being a shit towards you.
Right.
It happens all the time.
Yeah. One of the great dissociative white questions is, well, what should I do about this? Right. As if there haven't been a million suggestions about what to do. I just don't know. I just don't understand. What do I do about this? It's all really mysterious.
The answers are out there. You're not the first, anytime someone gets pushed on any sort of like questioning society kind of issue, that's always the first one. Like, well, unless you give me a detailed annotated bibliography of what the solution is, I'm not even going to listen to you. Like, there's that kind of response too.
Right.
Like, people have been talking about this for a long time. There's all kinds of solutions and responses, and you just weren't aware of it. We need to recognize that part of the repentance piece of repenting of whiteness. Performative hires, given no power. Yeah. Even at top levels, even with Chief Arredondo, like who's the chief of police, the chief of police has relatively less power than you'd think. And so he's always in this place where he has to kind of enforce the status quo, even when people kind of suspect he doesn't want to, doesn't have the power that we think he does. Yeah. Becca writes, it reminds me of how people started holding up Barrett during her Supreme Court hearings with memes that say things like, my only agenda is to apply the law, as if the U.S. Constitution doesn't have a sexist, racist agenda.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and that's one of the greatest techniques of whiteness, right, is this notion of objectivity. Like, I'm just being objective and nice and good. I don't have any agenda. There's nothing going on here. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's obscene and complete bullshit.
Adam is enthusiastic about his partner being Dr. Catherine.
Yes, Dr. Catherine.
Dr. Cat. Julio writes, can you put link in chat for a mapping project? Yeah, whoever, was that Catherine? Did you share that earlier?
Yeah, mapping Catherine.
Yeah, if you could share that link, that'd be helpful.
Yeah, actually, and then he found it later on. So.
Okay, good. Sure,
you betcha.
That's a very kind of a Minnesotan.
Yeah, Minnesota nice thing, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so wow, there's more comments. I just scrolled down.
Yeah,
where I was
it's
at.
Coming. It's coming. You gotta keep rolling.
Yeah. Yes, that's a common refrain. Not collegial.
Right. Yeah.
And then here's some truth from Karen. There's a reason I start churches.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to step into the middle of a white supremacy hoedown. Medina writes, yep, that was me. It was an incredibly disappointing conversation. So a lot of people are, resonating with what we're talking about. And, if you're watching this, and just if you're one of these people who somehow didn't, like, screen yourself out of listening to this because of what we've been talking about, and you're like, I don't know, it's maybe you're overemphasizing or exaggerating. Like, these folks are like, no. We're not even scratching the surface. We're not even talking about the depths of this. And a lot of people are already saying, yes, this is exactly right. So take their word seriously that this is a problem. So Julio shared the link here, mappingprejudice.umn.edu. So it's from the University of Minnesota. Catherine writes, as a PhD student, I started thinking about the main response of white churches and academic institutions to even basic conversations about the facts of American history. As a giant death marshmallow effect. Wow, I've never heard marshmallow used so seriously. But it makes sense because it's puffy, artificial, and white. And
right.
That explains
You sort of like get sucked into it and smothered.
You know, fake sweet silencing and misdirection, kind of indefinable blob of white ooze kind of coming at you and squeezing life. Yes. I'm not sure what Resign is talking about. Catherine writes,
That's something to do. You just have to resign. Yeah.
Catherine, I gave the annotated bibliography and got the death marshmallow. So even the annotated bibliography is not enough.
Yeah.
Joyce writes, Catherine Parent, can I use giant death marshmallow? I feel like this is just entered into the public lexicon. We just make sure we cite
Catherine. Yes, you should cite Dr. Catherine Parent, the originator of the death marshmallow. I think you should create the costume of the death marshmallow.
Isn't that the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man at this point, like from Ghostbusters?
Yeah, it's kind of like that from Ghostbusters, yeah.
But even worse. Adam writes, or they need all the facts and numbers before taking any action, even when provided they undermine it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing, right? So it's very important to recognize the complete bullshit of the questions of things like, well, what do I do? Or, right, I need the facts. Or, because as soon as you give it to them, or as soon as you tell them what to do, they're just like, oh, no, that's not enough. That's not real. Well, you know, that it seems like your sources are maybe a little suspect, or, oh, that's just a little too hard to do, right? I mean, it's all this haze of, you know, and theologically, when we talk about the fallen world, right, we're not talking about like teenagers wanting to masturbate. This is what we're talking about. We're talking about this haze of denial and intentional confusion that evil sets up, and that's what we have to wake up from when we talk about something like repentance.
This is where, like, so one example, and it's an extreme example, but it proves the point. So I left School of Theology in Denver, kind of recently came out, like, and people have known about this for years, but for a long time they had a Bible bound in the skin of an indigenous man. Right. Just let that sit. That's like, it's not a Necronomicon. It's like a Bible. And it was like his prized possession that people thought was beautiful and filled with, like, it's the Bible. And for years, they just didn't want to talk about this. They kept it under the rug. They just would, because it threatened, like, that kind of thing is not good for donors to talk about publicly. And so this is an example of people, I have no doubt, every president of that seminary, since they found out about it, was like, oh, that's not good. didn't do anything about it because the cost, they valued the power that they had and the money that they had more than they cared about whoever that man was whose skin was used for that Bible. This is a gross example of what happens every time in an institution. You talk to a manager and they're like, and they start coming up with these screens, these things like, oh yeah, we have to think about it. We need to learn all sides of the issue, like that kind of thing. It's all just to kind of protect their status, their power, and the integrity of the institution to continue as it has been continuing. And that's what's happening with policing now. No one wants to change squat. The city councils kind of like in Minneapolis said, oh, we'll do this. But then you knew that they weren't going to do it because at the end of the day, they'd be threatening their own power.
Well, and now, yesterday, they just announced that, Minneapolis has gotten one of these groovy new Justice Department tactical centers, which basically sounds to me like code for, totalitarian base camp. And they made this announcement yesterday, and now the Minneapolis Police Department, led by a black man, is now going to be hardwired into the Justice Department, database, intelligence services, all this kind of stuff, training and surveillance and all this of this.
Part of the militarization.
Yeah. Like, this is the great reform that we're getting after the George Floyd incident. All right. Well, we're over time, so let's have a few few last comments here.
I'm just playing the devil's advocate.
Yeah.
Prosecutor needs no advocate. Or they're resigned. Yes. S'mores 2020.
There we go.
Delicious. Oh. Alan, make a movie like The Blob, but have it be the death marshmallow.
There we go.
Then Karen, final word, haze of denial and intentional confusion indeed.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining in. Really appreciate all the comments. And watch for power. Watch for power. Forget personal nice behavior and watch for power.
And notice what people do and how it affects things more than what they say.
Yes.
And all right. We'll see you next time.
See you tomorrow.